Welcome to the Claims Game Podcast with Vince Perry. Get all the tips you need from insurance claim advocates and professionals and grow your public adjusting career to the next level. And now the commercial claims advocate, Vince Perry.
Okay. I'm very excited because we are not introducing somebody new, because you should already know who this person is, but we are introducing a new little segment that we're going to be doing on a monthly basis with my good friend and colleague. And he's going to get mad at me because I'm probably not going to allow to say that, because if they ask in a deposition, there's going to be some kind of issue with that. But the point is David Farber is here. David Farber, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
And what I meant, my good friend and colleague and all these things, is just that we've known each other for a long time. We've worked a lot of claims together over the last, I've been a PA for 15 years and I met you a year in, so basically 14 years. And not all of my claims have gone to David Farber, because we always allow the client to choose whomever attorney they want. So let's have that disclaimer here. Anton, when you're editing the video, put disclaimer. But it's good to have you on, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for the introduction. It's always great to see you and spend a little time with you talking about public adjusting and current state of things in insurance claims.
So before we get into a little bit more of a background on you and an introduction on you, because it has been a while since I've had you on the show, I do want to just get right to the point. We were talking about one of my latest videos I did. I put how to work claims across the United States. It's not as easy as people think, right? Because it really isn't as easy as just, at least for us on our end, and I know it's even more difficult for you guys, but on our end, it's not as easy as just simply applying or taking a test and getting a license. There's the actual, not only the operations portion behind it, but just all of the little intricate different details of not only the law, but the statutes and the requirements and the timelines and all these different things that are in every state are that much different. And you were just telling me how you just came back from Tennessee. You met with a public adjuster out there, and you were basically telling me about the same thing, where there's all these different things that are going on. And frankly, a lot of these attorneys don't even know how to handle it.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, to be honest with you. I mean, we were very fortunate, or have become skilled from being attorneys in Florida, where we tend to be a litigious state and we tend to have a fair number of natural catastrophes, obviously hurricanes. And therefore, we have a lot of claims and lawsuits and litigation that happen. And back in the day, there was only a number of attorneys that were handling these cases. When I used to be a defense lawyer, there were probably only like 12 lawyers. I know I'm dating myself, or 12 law firms that handled this sort of stuff. And then when I came out, I'd like to say I was like number 13. And then we stopped with the good law firms around 16 law firms. I'm just kidding. But there was an explosion, obviously, that happened with Hurricane Irma. And in 2017. And so what happened was, is a lot of attorneys got into the industry who didn't otherwise know how to practice in this area. And they just assumed it's like any other practice area, something like personal injury. And insurance law has a lot of intricacies and a lot of detail. And people aren't used to dissecting policies and understanding these intricacies. And it's even worse across the nation, which is what we were talking about before we came on, which is, I thought it was, you know, bad in Florida because a lot of other folks had jumped in and didn't know. And obviously, many have gotten proficient over the years. So I'm not knocking everybody in the state of Florida past the number of 16 firms. Obviously, there are other good law firms that have developed over the years. But across the nation, it's completely different. Florida also had the benefit of attorney's fees and costs. So it was an attractive jurisdiction for attorneys to litigate in, because ultimately it made the policyholder whole. It was a very good benefit that you could say to a policyholder, hey, listen, I as an attorney am going to do my best to actually operate like I wasn't even involved in your case. I'm just going to go in there and I'm going to do the best job I can, and I'm going to try and get you as much money as I can. And it's going to be like you never hired me in the first place, because you're only going to have to owe the public adjuster, and the insurance company is likely going to pay me the attorney's fees and costs in addition. We no longer have that benefit, and we've now joined the rest of the nation, or many states within the nation, that do not allow for attorney's fees and costs. So long story short, when you get into other jurisdictions who didn't have an attractive climate for these type of cases because of the attorney's fees and costs, the attorneys are not tremendously proficient in this area, and they do not know how to bring a case from A to Z, which is why I've had to step in nationally to help a lot of law firms bring a case from beginning to end so as to achieve an appropriate and just resolution for a client. And I've now moved my practice to the state of Tennessee, moving in the sense that I'm now operating there as well, because some of the things that I've seen just kind of blow my mind on both sides of the table, to be honest with you.
Interesting. Very interesting. So, yeah, so Florida is basically the school of hard knocks, where we have been dealing with insurance claims for quite some time now. And basically throughout the entire country, it's all kind of new to a lot of these guys, huh? I'm assuming on both sides too, because we're working pretty heavily in Connecticut and adjusters are meeting us out there, the insurance adjuster. They're like, who the hell are you?
Well, you know? It's more than that, right? It's exactly what you're doing with the education aspect of things. People in Florida, most or some or large percentage, know who a public adjuster is and what a public adjuster does. Still, you'll still find people, you'll say, I'm a public adjuster, and they'll say, what's a public adjuster? Even in the state of Florida. Now, can you imagine throughout the country where some people think that writing an estimate that's anything more than what the insurance company said it was constitutes fraud, and a public adjuster is just trying to game the system? That's what people are thinking, that the general consumer, because they're still of the stated belief that when the insurance company comes out there and they, you know, say,
we're in good hands,
the best job we possibly can for you, and we're going to write you this big check, and this is more than you're entitled to, and then they give them a check, the person really doesn't know any better, and they just say, well, I guess this is what I'm entitled to. I mean, the number of claims that exist in the United States are astronomical, between fires and floods and hurricanes and pipe bursts and thefts and whatever else. But the percentage of those claims that are actually represented by someone are minuscule in comparison. And when you think about that, because we know what we do as attorneys, and you know what you do as a public adjuster in order to obtain a just and fair result, it is upsetting, if nothing else, to say how much money is being left on the table for folks that are entitled to that money. And these folks need this money in order to make these repairs, and taking shortcuts with repairs only devalues their home. So it's really, really a difficult situation. And what you're doing from an educational standpoint on YouTube and to other public adjusters is hopefully getting the word out there that this is a real industry that has a real purpose, that can get a just and fair result. And if you do not get a just and fair result, you'll hopefully find a competent attorney who can represent your interests and get you from A to Z.
One of the things that I keep telling people to watch out for is that it's little things. Do you know Holly Soffer?
It's not a familiar name to me. No,
she's an attorney, but she actually specializes in what's the word I'm looking for? I could maybe look up her website, but she actually specializes in making sure that the public adjuster has their contract correct and understands all the different, laws that we have to abide by in every particular state. So what she does, I'll apply for a state and I will get my license. But in order to get my license, a lot of times I have to submit a contract. Well, I will let her know, and she will basically put the contract together for me, the last updated, most up-to-date, proper legal contract, so I could submit to the state that I will ultimately use. But then she also sends to me, what does she call it? She calls it, it's like a Word document, though. It'll just be like anywhere from 3 to 15 different things that this particular state requires, like making sure, like some I can't solicit until 48 hours after a storm, or there's no door knocking allowed, or there has to be a licensed representative at the house, or we have to wear a badge. You know, all these different things that every little state is a little bit different. And I just thought that was interesting, because I'm sure it's something that you're looking at too as well, because is that the same like with a lawyer? Like every state has its little differences that you have to be careful with on how you're presenting a case and how you're ultimately handling the case?
Absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, I'm glad that you're using the services of someone like that. I knew you would. You're a careful guy.
I'm a terrible guy.
Careful guy.
Oh, careful. It sounded like terrible. Like,
you're a terrible guy too. I think that as well. I really don't like you, but I mean, shit, you make me come here on these things and talk to you, but really don't like doing it. No, seriously, you, the fact that you do that is paramount because look, too many people get into things without knowing what they're getting themselves into, without doing the proper research, and just say, well, I'm a public adjuster, so I'll just walk into whatever state and do whatever I want to do. Or I'm an attorney and I can get licensed in another state and I'm just going to go do what I need to do. So for example, Texas is very different than Florida. Florida happens to have a online system through the Department of Insurance for these notices of intent. And there has to be certain precepts within the notice of intent that are relatively vague and ambiguous as to what it needs or what it requires, because undoubtedly, no matter what you file, the insurance company is going to say it doesn't meet the requirements of whatever and should be thrown out. I mean, it's typical. Nevertheless, they still pay whether you file an alleged deficient notice of intent or not. But you need to know that that is, in Florida, a precursor to being able to file a lawsuit, because if you file a lawsuit, it's ultimately subject to dismissal now without prejudice, which is going to start you back from the drawing board from the beginning. Okay. Texas has a requirement, the DPTA, which is a pre-suit letter that ultimately tells the insurance company, hey, listen, we're going to give you another opportunity to evaluate this claim if you want to do a reinspection. And you have to have all sorts of things within that letter. And if you don't have those sort of things within the letter and you file a lawsuit, you may not even be entitled to attorney's fees and costs as a result of the deficiencies within the letter. So you'll be subjecting your client to a loss of God knows how much money if you can at least preserve the right to be able to get attorney's fees and costs. And every state has some sort of nuance to it, as well as the common law, because states operate differently than other states in the sense that our case law doesn't mean it will transfer from one jurisdiction, Florida to Texas, or Texas to Tennessee, or Texas to New York, or any of the other states, as one would imagine. You have to research every nuanced issue to make sure that that state still holds the same proposition to be true. Because if you don't, again, you'll walk into it and you'll make an argument. And if you haven't done your due diligence, the first thing the court is going to do, or defense counsel, if he's a good defense counsel, is going to say, I'm sorry, lawyer, but that's a wonderful argument in Texas or Florida or whatever. Right. But that doesn't fly here. And now you've lost all credibility with the judge. And if you've got multiple cases with that judge, he's going to have a tough time trusting your position in the future. So, yeah, you got to be careful.
So what are some of the things that you're doing to make sure that you're prepared? Because, I know obviously you're a veteran in Florida, and I know that you've been working claims for a while in Texas as well. But what are some of the things you're doing as you step into a new state like Tennessee to make sure that you're prepared?
Well, first, not sleeping at night.
That makes two of us. Hey, you're not alone, buddy. Next time I'll call you at 3:30 in the morning.
Hey, man, I'll be up for sure. I am constantly trying to get educated in as many ways as I possibly can. And, you know, the best way to do that is to have a network, right? Of people that you know, like, and trust. And some of the folks in Tennessee, in particular, some of the public adjusters that I'm working with, have done the legwork in some respects to try and figure out a lot of the beginning points or the issues, because I'd say, hey, listen, these are the things and the propositions that I know to be true in Florida. Do you think that they hold true in Tennessee or New York or Texas or whatever the case may be? And they'll say, yes, no, maybe. And they'll say, I've seen it in this scenario and I've seen it in that scenario. Many public adjusters are very educated and sophisticated and do their research, even though they're not allowed to do the unauthorized practice of law. But in today's information age, anyone can get on the internet and find case law that supports their arguments. They can't make those arguments. And of course, I'm not supplanting somebody else's research for my own. I only use it as a starting point. And then, of course, once I start researching it and understanding it and doing the differences and the variances, then of course, the next thing I do is develop my own arguments. And then finally, before I actually step into court, again, this is my procedure, I'm going to reach out to a fellow lawyer who's either practiced in Tennessee or Texas or whatever and say, listen, I want to make sure I'm not misstepping here. Is there anything that I'm missing? For example, in Texas the other day, I wanted to make sure that nobody was sending to the Department of Insurance the notice of intent letter. I would have just assumed, and has been always my practice, to send it to the Department of Insurance. In that particular case, I was advised that's not something that's within the statute. I looked at the statute. I agreed it wasn't in the statute, and therefore likely not required. What I found out, which is interesting, is that insurance companies are certainly emboldened to maintain their current positions in Texas. And some of them, I mean, I literally sent my, and I'm just giving an example of one I did recently. I sent my my notice of intent yesterday, laid it all out, told them why they messed up, which is clear on its face. And today I got a response saying, we're standing on our decision. We're not evaluating anything. We're not listening to you. We have no position on this. We're standing on our decision. And I'm just like, hey, man, that made it easy. We're going into litigation. I have no problem with that. I've now satisfied what I needed to satisfy, and now I can get my potential attorney's fees and costs.
I'll tell you, a direction that we're headed in at Elite Resolutions is, quite honestly, the good. So, yes, in other states I've noticed, it's definitely, it's not the wild, wild west like Florida, I guess, where, quite frankly, not afraid to say this in a podcast, you know, a lot of it was just like, where do you want to be? Right. You know, we're at 100,000, you're at 20,000. Let's take a look at this estimate and let's figure something out. Right. Obviously, as long as there's coverage and the policy suffices and all that. But, you know, obviously it's a little bit more difficult. One of the directions that we're headed in is sort of like you, right? You're sort of looking at other attorneys to try to help you. We're looking at other public adjusters throughout the country to try to make sure that we're doing everything that we're supposed to do. But also, you know, we're always open to bringing on former company adjusters as well, because the good news is that the insurance industry and the insurance company not only gives us a hard time, but quite frankly, they give their own employees a hard time as well. And a lot of them aren't happy with the position that they're at and with what they're doing, and they want to jump to the other side. It's just hard to find an opportunity. So we're always open to speaking to and also bringing on and employing actual former company adjusters, because they got a leg up.
Well, they do and they don't.
Well, the mindset has to change, but I've noticed that only takes a few months.
And I appreciate and I understand that. But the one thing that you have to remember is that they received a lot of bad training to begin with. Now, some of them have been very properly trained and are excellent adjusters. Finding those are few and far between. As with most things in this world, you either got it or you don't. Or you either want to take the time to invest in yourself to get it or you don't. And if you want to half-ass it through life, that's your choice. However, those people who are on the forefront of making a change are going to invest in themselves and make sure that whatever they bring to the table is the best that it can be. And so if you're finding adjusters, whether they be defense adjusters or public adjusters or whoever the case may be, who has that mentality and has had that mentality from the beginning, then I agree. Go ahead and hire them and train them and show them, you know, a different way of looking at things. But you know, I'd always be hesitant, because whenever I take the deposition of some of these field adjusters, I'm just like, I can't even believe you're a field adjuster. I mean, I know you got a license, but nobody trained you. You didn't shadow anybody. You never went out to any inspection with an engineer or a plumber or anything. You readily admit you have no experience or background or training or skill as it relates to the identification of water damages. You've been told to only look at things visually. I had one adjuster testify yesterday that the insurance company actually instructs them not to use moisture meters when investigating water losses.
I will say though, yeah, stuff like
even
that.
Even though they have one.
Stuff like that, that's obviously, that's not even so much a lack of training as it's just them. It's just another tactic for them to find a way to underpay and just give them a leg up on using the policy to their advantage. But I will say, honestly though, David, man, come on. You know, I talked a lot. How many public adjusting firms actually train their public adjusters? And how many actual educational platforms are there besides mine? Jack Hanks has got one. Matt Mulholland's got one. Cal Spoon has got one. After that, I'm sorry if I'm leaving somebody out, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. You know, it's not very good on our side either. And what I've noticed is actually the actual training, and I worked for State Farm for a year and I had to train. I had to fly to Bloomington. I had to go to Winter Haven. I had to get actual training before I even started handling any kind of claim. Is it good training? Because they're kind of starting that whole brain. In that aspect, I would say no. But in the actual knows and just to, you know, and sort of understanding how to follow up with a claim and what's damage and what's not damage and stuff like that. Again, it's not all perfect, but at least it gives them a really good understanding of just the claims process. You know what I'm saying?
If they're paying attention and if they care. And those are the two things that...
Well, I don't want to hire those people then.
And that, unfortunately, is a large percentage of the people that you will run into a brick wall. It's like, look, I into litigation. I just want what's fair and reasonable for my client. Can't you see past your own two-dimensional view of this where, hey, listen, it is either this way or it's that way, but it's no other way other than those two. And therefore, I cannot push it through argument as to why. And then, of course, when we file a lawsuit, an attorney gets involved and he looks at it and he goes, okay, how can we make this go away? And I'm just like, and so I have to toss it up to either improper training or damage mitigation because, you know, they figured maybe with a less knowledgeable attorney or, you know, a fearful attorney or whatever, he wouldn't file a lawsuit or didn't care. But attorneys or insurance companies keep the statistics on people. So they know how many cases we're handling. They know what they're paying out over the years. They know what's going on. And by the way, not all insurance companies are bad, as you know. We only kind of see the problem cases because when it becomes an issue where they're improperly denying something, grossly underpaying something, acting in a bad faith manner, those are the type of cases that mostly come to us. There are many cases that just go through the process and work out the way that they're supposed to. And listen, my hat goes off to the insurance company and the adjusters for handling those claims appropriately.
You are correct, though. I've had a couple claims recently, one on my car, one on my house over the last year. And I mean, I obviously know the process and I knew how to follow up with some of the things and a couple rebuttals, but it wasn't too bad. It actually worked. Quick shout out to our new I have on a monthly basis. So thank you, David, for coming on. Sure. David.
Yes, sir.
So, how do you, let's just real quick. I mean, this is a national show. We do have, you were at the event and you saw, I mean, there was people from Colorado, there was people from Tennessee, there was people from California, people flew in from all over. But you know, how's it been the last 6 months or so since the law change where there's no attorney fees and costs anymore? Like how's it been on your side besides the sleepless nights?
Well, you know, like I said, I've been going into other states and I've been doing so for quite some time, and I appear what they call pro hoc vice. So if people don't know what pro hoc vice is, it's an opportunity to seek out local counsel in a particular state. And again, it's about having a good network. So I have recently handled a case in Kansas. I knew a lawyer in Kansas who I hold in high regard, and I don't make any missteps and follow the rules. Ideas off of you, and he said sure, and he agreed, and then I entered into that jurisdiction what they call pro hoc vice, and the court granted my admission, which most courts will do unless you have a checkered background, and practiced and got a successful resolution for that client in Kansas. So I can practice anywhere for a large enough claim. Obviously, it doesn't make sense for me to be involved in cases where there's no attorney's fees and the contingency percentage would be something relatively nominal because it's not always easily handled in that fashion. Plus, the concept of Zoom. Some jurisdictions don't employ that sort of technology, amazingly enough, and they actually want you to come in person, which of course can bog down the system greatly. But most jurisdictions are Zoom related. But to answer your question more specifically about Florida and what it's doing, it's going to catch up with itself. I mean, we're only feeling some of the effects, obviously, with the new claims. We're still dealing with a lot of Ian claims and cases that are pre-2023. Now, we do receive these claims where they happened in 2023. And of course, our counseling of the clients is far different than it used to be because they can no longer get the benefit of the attorney's fees and costs. And they're having to adjust their settlement parameters because what I'm always interested in is what is my client going to net? I say, look, after I'm paid, after the public adjuster's paid, the water mitigation people are paid, whoever else it is, what is it that you want to put in your pocket? And then we have to do a proper evaluation, a really careful evaluation, because if we misevaluate these sort of numbers after a notice of intent, which again could be a questionable thing, I'm not even entirely sure if a notice of intent is still the appropriate thing because they took away the attorney's fees and costs. So now the statute's sort of been eviscerated a little bit, but I do it as an abundance of caution. So yeah, I don't necessarily like it, but it has facilitated some settlements. And that's a good thing because the client is getting their money faster. I'm making less money. Public adjuster is making less money, but we're not entering into the litigation process. Right. Now, overall, is that good or bad? I guess the jury's out on that, right? Because essentially what we're getting is the same problem you get in other jurisdictions, which is if client has less money because client doesn't want risk, can client then find a reputable contractor right. to do the work? And if they can't, then do they have the additional funds to be able to pay a reputable contractor to get what they need to get done? And that, of course, scares me because we live in a state where if you don't have proper contractors that are doing proper work, you're going to have the next argument of defective installation when a subsequent claim happens or whatever the case may be, or you're going to have additional damage when a hurricane comes or something happens and they maybe roof tiles become a projectile and then you're dealing with life, liberty, and things of that nature, which could be dangerous. And of course it devalues the home. So it is a major, major problem. And I'm hoping that the voters of Florida figure out a way to change this legislation because ultimately it's only going to be a product of receiving like a hurricane one or two that causes just enough damage, but affects a large number of people. But because the deductible is so high, and then you have this draconian roof stuff, we can talk about that in another podcast. These folks aren't going to be able to get adequate and appropriate representation because their claim may only be after the deductible, only $20,000.
Well, that's my concern is the smaller claims. Like we are a firm that kind of, I mean, we are volume, we are small claims. We don't do as many large claims as I wish that we did, but that's okay with me because, you know, I think that's the people who need it most. You know, you live in Miami, I'm born and raised in Miami, and we know that a lot of our clients don't speak a lick of English. Yet every single adjuster that goes out there, they don't speak a lick of Spanish. And you already know the policy is, 84 pages long. It's already in another language. If you do speak English and if you speak Spanish, you're not going to understand a single word of it. And I think it ends up screwing a lot of the smaller homes. A lot of those. What is it? I think the average claim is what, about $15,000-$20,000 or something like that. Or it's not $100,000. It's not the ones that we've handled for so many years, $1 million plus and stuff like that. It's 20,000, 25,000, maybe 30,000, you know? And those are the people that are going to get hit because if I can't win it, it's going to be tough for me to give it to an attorney because now there's just all kinds of contingency fees on there that are going to be taken or even the appraisal process. Like you got to pay $1,500, $2,000, $2,500 bucks for an appraiser. If they don't agree, you got to go to the umpire. So now you got to pay an umpire, an appraiser, and a public adjuster. Even without using an attorney, you're left with nothing. You know, so it's pretty rough, man. Pretty rough.
Yeah, look, it's not going to stop my firm from taking some of those cases, sort of to help people and serve as goodwill to my community. We expect that we're going to make less. But it's important that we have happy clients and that, you know, the people of Florida are being protected the best that they can. Now, obviously, we can't take everything because we would go broke, too. And if insurance companies don't man up, for lack of a better word, and do the right thing, and they want to make it extremely difficult to prevail on these things, it's going to be a real problem and a nightmare. Because once you actually get into litigation, and I presume public adjusters are counseling their clients, well, not counseling, but letting them know that there is no free lunch when you get into litigation, that there's a potential possibility and most likely a possibility of what they call a proposal for settlement. And without getting into the technical details of that, but if you lose or you get less than the amount of the offer, you could potentially be, not you, public adjuster, but the insured could potentially be on the hook for the defense's attorney's fees and costs. So if you're only looking at, say, a $15,000, $20,000 claim, and you're getting served with this proposal for settlement, and you're saying, how much money am I going to put in my pocket after the attorney and after the public adjuster and whatever else, does this really make logical sense for me to be able or wanting or to do this? And so it comes down to education again. You got to make sure that your client knows all of these things up front, not necessarily from a public adjuster standpoint, but from an attorney standpoint, which, of course, takes a lot more time than it used to. I mean, we used to have these conversations even beforehand because we don't like the idea of somebody getting involved in a case and then getting cold feet and being like, I don't want to be involved. You know, this is too much stress, pressure, whatever. We say, look, this is the legal environment that we exist in. Before, with the attorney's fees and costs, it changed that environment because ultimately, when you served a proposal for settlement, it was supposed to include attorney's fees and costs. And because we charge a lot and we bill a lot, just like the defense lawyers, although they don't charge as much as we do in terms of an hourly rate, that's because they're set by the insurance company. The proposal for settlement usually could never be realized. I mean, in all of the years that I've been handling these type of cases, I've only had one proposal for settlement that went opposite to one of my clients in a personal injury matter. Even after that, we were still able to work out an agreement where she did not ultimately have to pay those attorney's fees and costs because we threatened an appeal and everybody walked away. So practically speaking, you know, it's just the cost of doing business and just the new landscape and environment that we have to deal with. And so education from a lawyer perspective and from a public adjusting perspective and from an insurance claims perspective is paramount to making sure that everybody goes into these things eyes wide open.
David, how can people find you? Are you easily accessible like you've always been to me?
Always. I'm just a phone call away, an email away, whatever somebody wants to do. I'm always happy to have a conversation, talk policy. I always love to learn new things. If somebody's got a different way of thinking about something or trying to press or stress an issue to get the best possible result for somebody, you know, it always baffles my mind that there's so many lawyers out there that have such hubris or confidence or whatever the case may be, that just believe that they just know it and have it and don't need the assistance of anyone. I personally love to roundtable ideas and topics and case law, because case law changes like all the time. So when you were asking me those questions about, you know, do you have to know the procedures and the rules about going into different states, the best efforts that you can get, even in preparing for these things, aren't going to change the fact that case law is going to be changing. So the thing you knew yesterday may not be the thing that you need to know today. So in any event, if you want to reach me and if you want to pick up the phone and call me, it's 305-774-0134, or my toll-free number, I got 833-INS-LOSS, or Vince's favorite, 888-FARBER. And then, of course, you can send me an email at dfarber@dfarberlaw. The spelling of my name is on the computer. And D as in David, not the. I'm a little under the weather today in case I'm
sounding. You sound a lot better than you sounded yesterday or the other day.
Yes, I am feeling much better. Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. Because you sounded like you had a frog in your nose.
Did you say a frog? Fraud?
Yeah.
which insurance commercial was that?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was. I remember that they were talking about frogs and fraud.
Did I tell you? Did I tell you what my big, hairy, audacious goal is?
No, tell me.
A Super Bowl commercial.
Wow. Wait, which Super Bowl?
Because it's always State Farm commercials, and it's always Allstate commercials, and it's always State Farm Arena, and it's always Allstate Stadium. Like, our big, hairy, audacious goal is my big, hairy, audacious goal. It doesn't even have to be, honestly, to be honest, I don't even care if it's Elite Resolutions or not. I want a public adjusting firm to have a Super Bowl commercial. And I want a public adjusting firm to have their name on a freaking stadium. Well, I feel like that's the only way that we will be able to accomplish my other big, hairy, audacious goal, which is to never have to answer the question again of what is a public adjuster? Hey, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a public adjuster. What is a public? Like every time, David, every time, 15 years I've been doing this. And even in Florida, it's the same thing. It depends on what mood I'm in. If I'm ready to actually give an explanation, then I'll say I'm a public adjuster because I know what the follow-up question is. Or I'll say I'm a public adjuster and they just look at me funny. They're like, oh, okay. And I'm just like, do you know what that is? No, I have no idea. I'm like, okay. And then I'll explain it. Or I just say I'm an insurance adjuster and then I walk away.
Well, I think if anyone can accomplish that big, hairy, audacious goal, it's you. I think you need to decide which Super Bowl year you're interested in attempting to have this Super Bowl commercial.
Why?
And you know, obviously, the reasons that these insurance companies are able to have those commercials, because there is no better business than being in insurance, because they essentially sell you air. And then when you ask for that air back, because you have costs, it's like, that's not your air. That's our air. If you want it, you're going to have to pry it out of our cold, dead hand.
Smart people though, man. Like
they're, for sure.
Yeah, dude. Like they know what they're doing business wise. And honestly, just the whole, I remember going through like a little bit of trade, like the whole underwriting department and determining risk and stuff like that. Like that's some intense stuff.
Look, insurance controls everything. It has so much in terms of jobs
and the stock market.
It trickles down in every aspect. And you know, they have these actuaries, obviously, like you were mentioning, and they're able to figure out risk, you know, as to what I'm going to eat for breakfast tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing what you can do with enough information. And as we get down to more nitty gritty with AI. I guarantee you insurance companies are, and conspiracy theory, you know, are running analysis of folks to determine which policyholders would be a good policyholder to advertise to, who would not potentially file a claim because they don't have a history of wanting to rock the boat. If that's not already occurring before AI, it's going to occur in the future and other aspects of that. And so, you know, we're always operating from behind the eight ball.
And I don't know much at all about the health insurance industry, but I do hear that the health insurance industry is much worse than our industry.
Well, I mean, I've dealt with some health insurance claims and some denials and things along that line. And yeah, for sure. I find that they're less than our claims because they're more prevalent. I mean, yes, everyone's having healthcare and everyone's having claims and things along those lines, but it's not every day that people are having massive surgeries or need experimental drugs or whatever the case may be. They exist for sure, but not on the level of, for example, Tennessee just had, you know, a record-breaking freeze that an entire area. Pipes just broke. While I was there this weekend, I checked into my hotel and I'm like, look at all these dehumidifiers. I'm like, what happened? They're like, our pipes froze and they exploded all over our hotel. I'm like, oh, hotel loss. It's pretty serendipitous. And
did you speak to anybody? Come on, you got to use your gift of gab there.
Yeah, I more or less said, look, because again, I don't like to necessarily be first to the draw on this sort of thing. I said, hey, listen, I'm meeting with a public adjuster in a little bit. If you'd like to speak with him about, you know, presenting your claim, and he'd be happy to help. Surf Pro was on the scene in 2 seconds. You know, it was, I was just like, this is humorous. But
I got a referral yesterday because of a nightmare of Surf Pro, that they were just a nightmare. They weren't doing anything right. Like, they were just setting up a bunch of machines, blowing mold all over the place, and it was just a disaster.
Yeah. In some franchises of that Surf Pro, and I believe they're franchises.
All of them. I actually know a couple Surf Pro guys that are actually really good guys.
They do a great job. Yeah. Some of them do a great job, but others, they don't have a clue, and they're causing more damage. And again, that's why people like you and me exist, to, again, hold them accountable for the things that they do, especially when they're doing it on behalf of the insurance company. Yeah. It is a difficult business. It's a complicated business, but it's a business that's necessary and should be exalted, as opposed to put into a dark little corner and said, don't talk about that.
It's very odd.
Talked about, it should be talked about everywhere.
That's why, hence the big, hairy, audacious goal.
Why don't you start with maybe getting a Goodyear blimp? You know, get a little sign, you know, that's probably more effective, or, you know, attention grabbing. Maybe.
Well, I actually heard that, and the reason why that also became my goal is I actually heard also that the price of a Super Bowl commercial, they say, is actually undervalued. Believe it or not. All the millions upon millions upon millions of dollars is because of the amount of eyes that you get on that commercial are like, you can't get it in anything else. Like, in the entire planet is how many people watch the Super Bowl.
Well,
for now, until somehow, some way AI gets involved and you record it and you watch it. I don't know.
I wonder if it's the statistic, because that's pretty much one of the few things that people really watch anymore, without like Netflix or Hulu or Disney Plus or all of those things. It's like, people ask me all the time, did you see the commercial about the such and such? I'm like, I don't watch normal TV. I don't sit there through a commercial anymore. But what do you get excited for when you have a Super Bowl?
The commercials.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Not to say that, I mean, of course, if your team's in it and you're excited about football, then that's a different story. But a lot of the times I'm like, cool, I can't wait to see what commercial. And there were some good personal injury commercials that they can get away with some stuff in Texas that I was like impressed by. But they need one of those for public adjusters. So you should start scouting that out now.
I'm telling you. Well, I'm just throwing it out to the universe first and see where it happens, and see what happens after that. All right, David.
Yes, sir.
We are finished. I want to thank you for coming on. Okay. Guys, David Farber is the man. We're going to start having him on much more often. I think it's only right. He's a strong supporter of everything. All the crazy ideas that I've had over the last several years here. And I truly appreciate that. And he just knows his stuff. And I think it's pretty cool that you're branching out into other states. I think, unfortunately, we're at a point in the business where it's kind of the right move. We'll see where we're at in 5 or 10 years, right? I'm sure you and I will still be trucking along in this business. But I do want to thank you for coming on. I do look forward to speaking to you on the show on a monthly basis. And if you guys want to contact David, David's super accessible. I always tell the story, when we first met, that's all I asked him for, was to be accessible. And he's always been that. So if you guys want to shoot him a message, we'll leave all of his contact information here below. Make sure that you've got the Instagram channel, right? You've got Facebook, you've got all kinds of stuff, any kind of way that you could reach out to David if you have a question. He's also in our Facebook group as well. And you'll be seeing a lot more of David. David, thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, Vince. It's a pleasure as always. Great seeing you. To all your listeners out there, whatever you need, I'm here to be a resource for you. As Vince said, I'm pretty accessible in multiple different ways. Instagram, you want to go ahead and like the page and follow and all of that good stuff. Send an email, I'll respond as soon as I'm able. Telephone, we'll get back to you. You know, everything from a communication standpoint is key. And that's why Vince and I have worked so well together over the years, because neither one of us have ever gotten too big of a head. We always remain amenable to making sure that we provide the best quality product for our clients. And the only way to accomplish that is through communication. So thank you, Vince, for always being there, because I've learned a tremendous amount from you as well.
Oh, I appreciate that. All right, I'm going to stop it now. We'll see you next month.